MyDomain.com, this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I'm speaking with someone who I've known for well over a decade and who is perfect for Second Life, Sophia Rossi. Sophia started her career in television as a reality TV producer for two of my favorite shows ever, The Hills and The City, which were huge hits on MTV. After working her way up in the entertainment industry, she made a big switch in 2011 when she founded the platform Hello Giggles, a positive-minded online community for women. Sophia grew the site from an idea into an incredibly popular destination with over 1,500 contributors and 10 million visitors every single month. She also sold it for $30 million in 2016, which is not bad for a five-year exit. She's also one of the warmest people you'll ever meet, and I am delighted to have her here today. This is Sophia Rossi on Second Life. Thanks for joining me, Sophia, and welcome to Second Life. Like a lot of the women on this podcast, one of the things I think is really interesting about you is that you skipped college and started working right after high school. So tell me about your first job.
My first job was, I was obsessed with music videos. That's actually how I became best friends with Catherine, your co-founder. But we were obsessed with all those Dave Myers, like J-Lo videos, like the Missy Elliott videos. And I just like approached this production company called The Band Apart, and I interned for them. And then I started working there, and I just...
Did you know to intern? Because I'm not going to lie, when I went to college, when I graduated from high school, the idea of interning was like completely foreign to me. So how did you even know to do that? I mean,
honestly,
now everyone interns,
yeah.
But like that was not a thing.
It's honestly all a blur. I think that Catherine Power was just so someone that I wanted to like emulate everything that she did. And she was like, I'm just going to be working. And I was like, great. Like I literally went to one day of like, I guess I didn't really know, but I knew that I wanted to stay busy. I was like a summer camp counselor, so I had saved up money from that summer at a side hustle. So
I love that you're like, I'm 17, I have a side hustle.
Yeah.
So what was that first job like? Like, what kind of things were you doing?
I got to see how they made treatments for music videos. It was like, also, there was a bunch of directors who were like, not fighting, but sort of like all putting in their treatments for this like Britney Spears video. And I think about it now sometimes, like I loved set life. Like I thought that seemed really fun, that it was like camp. Like people were just in this like selected group of people for a certain amount of time. And I felt like that energy would be really fun, you know? And so I was like, how can I gravitate towards that? And I just enjoyed music videos, but I don't think I could say what I wanted to do about it.
So were you doing production then at that point, or were you assisting? Like,
I think in entertainment,
responsibilities, like.
Maybe this is like my take on it, and I would be curious other people. I feel like in entertainment, if you start off as an assistant, which most people do, you're always just a glorified assistant. Like I've been executive producer, like I've been like a consulting producer, and I'm like the power dynamic of course changes, but my role, I feel like I've had this weird thing in my career where like my opinion is something that I'm very confident on, and it'll be as simple as, I think we should film at this location, at this restaurant. And, like, I think I just go so in that people are like, I guess. Like I think so that was sort of, like, my charm to music videos, where I'd be like, oh, this is a good location, or I grew up here. And because a lot of times productions are people who are also freelance or not necessarily from here. So that was sort of my niche of being like, what do I think is missing, and what do I think I can apply? But being from L.A., I realized later on really helped my production value.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, The Hills, it really helped with. The Hills was like anything I possibly wanted to do. I was like, we're doing this.
That's so funny. Okay, so, but before we get to that, which I have a million questions about The Hills, you go from working on music videos to then you worked with Damon Dash.
I went to music videos and then I met Catherine and then I worked for Amanda Demme, a music supervisor, while Catherine worked at Bolt House Productions. So it was like a nightclub event. So then Catherine and I worked nights and we would get paid for bottle service. And I once made $1,600 in one night.
Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Because you'd have to pay me $100 just to me. I mean, the person, like Catherine and I, you'd have to pay us $100 just to get the VIP table. And this is when, like, people were really desperate and into clubs. So, I mean, I'm sure the people still are, but in a way where I don't think people would probably pay that, but they would tip us just to literally walk them to the table and say they had the table. Then their waitress, like, the waitress at the end of the night would be, like, probably hated us being, like, what is this? But yeah, so we did like Los Palmas and like that like very like Britney Spears era of clubs. And I would be reading a book downstairs waiting for the time for it to open. And then I'd be like, okay, great. I'm going to make a lot of money in 1 hour. So then I did that. And then from that, I met Mark Ronson. His sister, Samantha Ronson, was signed to Dame & Dash. And he had come to town one time and he was like, you should come do LA marketing for me. And I was like, I don't even know what this job is. This feels fake. And then he was like, come to New York and you'll see what it is. And I was like, okay, like, I, you know, and I went to New York and I just didn't go back for like 2 years.
Okay, so
how many jobs? And that was like my real school.
I was going to say, how many jobs did you have at the same time then? So if you're like working on Bolt House things, working with Amanda, and then.
Yeah, I guess I had a lot. I had a lot of hustles going on.
You had a day job and a night job.
Yeah.
And then. Got this other gig.
And then I got this other gig, too. And then he was.
And
he,
then moved to New York.
And then I moved to New York. But
did you know anyone in New York?
I knew Samantha's twin sister, Charlotte Ronson.
And that's it.
And that's it.
Is that not scary? I mean, you're what, like 19?
Yeah, I was 20.
20.
20. It just happens. He, like, tricked me. He was like, come here and meet all the staff. And it was like at that point, Rockaware was really big.
Yep.
And the label was big. And he was, like, starting all these companies. And he just has, like, a very. Listen. I will forever be grateful to Damon and his partner Biggs, who I'm still really close to Biggs, is they just have this energy of this family mentality to the point where sometimes they'll say that we wouldn't do that in Harlem. I'm like, I am not from Harlem. Like, they're like I'm like, I am from Beverly Hills, a Jewish girl from Beverly Hills. They're like, would your Harlem family do that? Would you? And I was like, this is like a mentality that I don't even know. When I left, I cried. They're like, you're leaving the family. I was like, I'm so scared.
So you did that for
I did that for 2.5 years.
And you were doing marketing?
I was basically Damon. First, I was to do marketing. And then I sort of became his executive assistant, which I'm so grateful for because I learned every different type of business. Like, he would want to launch a vodka or he would want to launch, like, a TV show. And I would just be the point person to, like, for all of that.
Whoa.
And at the level that he was at, what I think people don't realize the most is what I'm realizing is a lot of the lessons that I learned are from the inbounds of business that people never actually goes to fruition. Like, if something comes to a meeting, you're like, I wish our company could figure out the technology to work with you guys, but we can't. But that's so interesting that you came in. So there's a whole world of people pitching him as an entrepreneur, just these different businesses that didn't apply necessarily to the traditional business.
But you're getting that exposure.
Yeah. And you could, and you have 2 or 3 meetings about it and you see, you know, if is that really where the direction the company can go? And a lot of times, like him, he's a very excited character, and so I would get excited with him. But a lot of behind-the-scenes people sort of taught me a great meeting doesn't mean it applies for your company.
So you're working with Damon. At some point, you produced a show for him, too, right?
Yes, I'm working with Damon, and the fun part about it is, which I'm just realizing now, is every time he would launch an artist, he would then surround it with either, like, a clothing line or a market. Like, he was just, like, a very 360 marketing person early on. One of the things that I got to launch with him was Kanye West's first album. It was just, like, it was just interesting to see that I wasn't as impressed with the music industry, I have to say. I thought that it didn't, like, move fast enough. So then he wanted to do a TV show, and we did it for BET. And I was, like, the main point person for it.
How did you know how to do that?
A lot of it is human behavior in, like, reality shows like that. It's like you can pinpoint, like, who has the drama. I've always been really – my emotional IQ is very high. Sometimes that's, like, from trauma-induced, or sometimes that's just, like, your personality. So I'm sure it's, like, a mixture. I could just tell what was happening, so I was really valuable to the producers in a way that I love for myself. And one of the producers ended up being the head of production of MTV.
So is that how you ended up parlaying that job into being a producer for The Hills and the City?
Yes. Yeah, so I was doing Damon's show and I was living in New York and he was like, hey, we're shooting a pilot for this show called The Hills. It's one of the girls from Laguna Beach. And they're like, it's back in L.A. And I was like, maybe that's a reason to go back in L.A. And it was just the pilot. And so I just, like, really took a chance on it. And I'm very happy I did. I mean, Damon and Biggs were not very happy I did. That was when they were like, we don't do that in Harlem. And I was like, I got to go back to Beverly Hills, I guess.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah. And then I went. And then the job that they positioned for me had been created off of the model of Laguna, which is a talent manager. Now it's so common when you see, like, Unreal or you see what that was. But, like, it was sort of, like, a very not-traditional job of production in that you were the key person that would talk to all the talent and then you would articulate to production where you think things should be filming. So my first intro was a call with Lauren and Heidi, I remember. And they were only, like, 4 years younger than me, but we had a thing where we'd call them the kids. So I'd be like, the kids say or the kids want. So that I did for 5 years.
So what was your day-to-day like when you were on set or what, like managing?
On set,
managing that talent.
Yeah. On set, I sort of delivered like them. So on set, I was pretty much in a vehicle watching them like eat food for like 3 hours. And if they'd ordered dessert, I'd be like, I will kill you. Like, we need to go home. Like, because we'd get them into all these restaurants to film because they're like beautiful locations. And also another thing that we did that Lauren sort of caught on for and did not like, and I actually really respect her for it, is we would sometimes be like, film all these dinner scenes, and then they paid for them because we wanted it to be real. But I'm like, she's like, I wouldn't really be here, so you're gonna really pay for my dinner, like, because we'd be like, you're having 3 meals today, all on you. It was BlackBerry time, and so I had a thing called BlackBerry BBM Productions, which is like a set joke because you couldn't talk to them in the middle of scenes. So I would just like on fire BBM them.
And by that, you mean like ask this question or what do you mean by this?
Yeah, so just like... to disrupt the restaurant flow of it. But like I'd be like, there's something in your, you know, move your cup, or like you haven't asked her about her day. Like just sometimes to move story along.
Prompts.
Yeah, and sometimes if we'd have to do reshoots, which like, you know,
happens.
Lauren would text, is this before or after Christmas? Like, she didn't know where it was going to be edited. So, like, she didn't know if she could say certain things on it. Before that, it would just be, like, checking in with them and seeing where they're at. It was really emotional for me. Like, it's really fun the first few years, and then you're just, like, in too deep.
God.
I had, like, a mini breakdown from it. I imagine other shows have it a million times worse, so I wasn't, like, torturing people. But otherwise, production on reality is more catching the vibe of where the characters are at and then putting them in locations that sort of will induce that conversation. Like a trip, a club.
I never really thought about, like, the behavioral scientist aspect of it. And do you think that all of these years of watching people, figuring out what their underlying emotions are, their underlying motivations are, does that help you in business?
100%.
Because, like, can you walk into a room and read it in a way that maybe you couldn't if you hadn't had this background?
Yeah, I think I can walk into a room and read it, and I also know when it's not appropriate to read it because I think
so that, you can turn it off.
Yes, and I make a really big effort of that when I got into starting my own company because I was so responsible in a way that for Lauren and Heidi and Whitney and everything they were feeling that day. And sometimes like that just creates a dynamic where like it actually did matter to me if Lauren was in a bad mood because that would change what the scene was. And if you're a boss, you know, at Hello Giggles, for example, like if one of my employees is like in a bad mood, it's really none of my business unless she wants to tell me it's that. But like I was like an emotional bully in one area and then you have to sort of realize your boundary in another way. And equally, there's a balance, but I think that with Lauren, so much of the dynamic of filming with Lauren was based on our personal relationship. Like, and we say,
can you explain that? I don't even know what that means.
Like when she goes to France, she was really jet lagged. And so Lisa Love, she's like goes to the ball and she's in France and it's like we're filming there. But keep in mind, like we're filming as much as you can, but there's a 12-hour day. You can have rotating crews, but it's not 24 hours like cameras in their rooms. So it's really like production is following behind. And she was really jet lagged and cranky and we were all tired. And she was like, we were just like yelling at each other. And I was like, we all like, I have to treat her like she's my daughter. You know, I remember her crying and she's crying in the scene about the dress being ruined, but she's also really mad at like her older sister who just cussed her out in front of like an entire crew, you know? or she is like riding a motorcycle through Paris with pins in her hair from this like thing and she has to come back and lay down like on my lap and I'm like, you have to go out one more time and go do this because they didn't get the shot. She's like, I will. Like, it's so much as like an emotional pull, but I guess that's what a director sort of would get out of their talent, but that's a dynamic that's very personal. You know,
how did your role change with the shows over time?
I had a lot more responsibility on the city in New York because then I was traveling and I was sort of like with another executive producer, the only LA team out there. It changed in the sense where like my trust with the the team was really important. Like, we had an amazing team. Like, you know, the first female cinematographer to be nominated for an Oscar was R. Hill's DP.
Yes.
Rachel Morrison.
Yes, because I follow you on social media, but, like, and you talked about it. But, like, that's amazing.
But that's amazing. Like, poor Rachel was in, like, Hawaii, like,
beautiful.
Waiting for Brody and Lauren to kiss on, like, a hill. Well, all we want to do is rap. Like, Lauren has, I mean, like, we've, like, Rachel has had got to go through so much. And, like, look where, like, it was just a team that, the look of it, they did such a great job of making it look. And the music
it
was so fun.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, Lauren, the example I gave in Paris is, like, she wouldn't go and kiss this guy outside of this hotel because she, like, didn't actually like him. And we were like, we just need the shot. She's like, you're just going to play some Avril Lavigne song and show me looking sad. Like, does it even matter? And I was like, great point. You know what? Just walk away from the scene of it. Like, but she, like, she was the best executive producer that you could ask for. We were in on it together. So,
got
yeah,
it.
So that's sort of my production was very, felt emotional.
Got it. And did it feel as emotional on the city?
Not as much because Whitney's husband now was one of the producers, my friend Hillary's brother, and they really developed a bond. So she kind of had her own team. I sort of checked in on, like, a higher level.
Got it.
But they had their own little system on it. But when I did production, while I was starting Hello Giggles as a side thing to do money out of my apartment, I consulted on Glee, and that did not feel emotional. Like, people always be like, did you love the Glee cast? I was like, never went to set. Like I couldn't even tell you. Like, certain productions, I realized you're not really integrated with the cast in the same way. So that's what I sort of liked, thinking I want to be more unscripted because it was less emotional. You could write for them or you could talk about them in a room, but
without actually
be seeing them. And that sort of allows you to, like, have a separation.
And some breathing room.
Yeah. I mean, not for Ryan Murphy. He never felt separated, but.
Right.
You know.
So tell me about starting Hello Giggles.
So I did The Hills and The City for 5 years, and then I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do next. It's really hard to transition from reality. I'm not a writer, from reality to scripted, and that's sort of what, like, in essence, The Hills was for me, was a scripted. We really thought out plot. We really edited in a way that, like, felt scripted, and so I really didn't know what my position would look like in a scripted world, so I would consult. I did, like, one season of America's Top Model. I would, like, go around to consult because I couldn't commit to anything. And then I sort of I watched you and Catherine. I thought that was so exciting. You know, I think what I always felt that I was missing at that point to do something on my own was what the partner looked like. But I loved the idea that, like, you guys got there in the morning and, like, we're just really trying to figure something out. And it just looked really cool. So then Funny or Die, I was going to possibly take a job there. It started off. I was starting to hear, like, rumblings of people really into, like, now it's, like, very common, but branded video content. And so I did a thing for my friend Ricky Van Bean, who did College Humor. And I was like, I could do this for women. There should be a Funny or Die for women. And he's like, we've actually tried to start it, but it didn't work. And I was like, yeah, because you're not a woman. Like, it's not going to work. And at one point, I really wanted this job at Alloy because I was like, I'm going to do that for Alloy. I had a lot of friends in comedy socially. I was like, we should make funny content for women. So my whole idea was that it was going to be a video site for Funny or Die for Women. And then I met Molly MacLear, and she was the first person who introduced me to – because you had a different route in writing, but she was, like, the contributor model. And she was just writing for, like, 7 random sites a day and getting paid, like, $40. And it was, a day's work. Then she would get, like, $300. It was, like, a great day rate. I was like, I didn't even know this existed. You know, sort of Jezebel – era of these sites that would pay for that. And so that was her sort of take on the model of there's work that people need to have, like, there's stories to tell. And then I met Zoe at Tracy Anderson. We had a friend in common. She was like, would you ever want to go to lunch? And I was like, okay. And so we went to lunch and she's like, what are you up to? I was like, I think I want to do, like, a Funny or Die thing for women. She was like, I would do that with you. After the meeting, emailed me after, and she was on it. Like, the most on it she's been is to secure that we did this company, and I'm grateful for her for it because, like, that's, like, she
–
It started, yeah. And so then we did one branded video for this company, Teleflora, and then I used the profits to, like, build out the site. And at that same time, Molly got a job on Two Broke Girls and New Girl started. So it was just, like, the
Whoa.
First 2 years were me just figuring out how to run a website. And I made so many mistakes that, like, it actually makes me it makes me laugh now, but it makes it really challenging to think about starting another company because I was like, oh, I can't, like, go where I went.
So what kind of mistakes?
Well, I didn't trademark it. And so one day I got a direct Facebook Messenger and they were like, hey, check out my Hello Giggles app. And I was like, what? And it was a built out app of Hello Giggles. And I'm like, you can't do that. And they're like, well, do you have the trademark? And then I called Catherine immediately. And she was like, talk to my guy in like North Carolina. I don't know, whoever trademarks it. And I used your trademark guy. And so like all those sort of things would happen. Tennessee. Yeah. I think we still used them up until we got acquired. And like Time Inc. was like, we could transition out of this. But yeah, so though that's the kind of mistake. Molly used to not like when I said it. She said it made me sound dumb, but I don't care. I didn't know that you had to have servers to use the internet. And I was like, you have to pay for space. So like my entire company is running off of like a warehouse in Las Vegas. Like this is crazy. Because we got the benefit of having so much traffic the first launch of it because it was the same time of like Zoe and her audience. And it just like was a good timing to have positive media. We did it response to like we knew you guys were doing fashion. And I was like, I don't necessarily care how you wear the like from day to night, the outfit, but I'm still exist in this world as a woman, like where can we have humorous, lighthearted comedy? And not, I don't even want to say it's comedy, like humor. Like we wanted to talk about like nostalgia. We wanted to
talk. It was very lifestyle.
It was evergreen at first because we didn't have the ability to be topical. And that was sort of the positioning. It's like it's evergreen content, not topical. And then now, like as it's transitioned, like we're able to have a voice in the topical.
How did you get all of your contributors? Or like where did they come from? Was it, how did that work?
We asked 50 of our closest friends to send out if people were interested in it. What I liked about it in the beginning is, and you're like obviously a professional and an editor, it's a very intimate experience. So if you say to someone to write an article, they're really intimidated. You know, it's really like I imagine when I see like the Goop newsletter or the Lenny letter too is a perfect example. It's like it's very intimate to share your story. But if you know that the person on the other end isn't going to judge you and edit you, it allows for like that relationship. So I think we just sent out to people who weren't, maybe they were like an OBGYN and like had kind of wanted to write on the side, or there were a mom who like had a funny story about her kid but didn't know like where that would really go, you know? And so we sort of wanted to be the home for people. Like Shannon Woodward was like, I have like a cool story I want to write about. And a lot of these screenwriters then were interested in just side conversations of subjects that they were super fans of, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what was it like working with partners and working for yourself versus being a smaller piece in this larger machine like you had been before?
I love my schedule. I love being in control of my schedule. I think that changes my entire dynamic. I like learning from other people, and I like learning from people who are smarter than me, and I think that that is something that I actually just heard on the Goop podcast, the guy who wrote Plan B or Option B with Sheryl Sandberg, and he said, "And you should argue like you're right and listen like you're wrong." And I don't think that when you're a boss, you really get to listen because I felt like I was like talking and saying these are all the things that I need, and I don't think that I listened enough. Whereas when I was all my whole job at the Hills was to listen, you know, and then I felt like I excelled in that. And then I think becoming a boss, you listen less. And that's something that, like, I want to apply more. You know, when you enter a meeting and it's like, I don't know, whether it's 5 people or 10 people, and they're all just staring at you and you catch yourself and you're like, am I just talking? And, like, you hear your voice. You're like, what am I even saying? Like, like, what, you know, like, is this effective? Like, is this just to be? But, like, there's an energy that you have come in to present and it's just an admirable thing. I think being a leader, it's like I look at like a self-help teacher like Marianne Williamson. I'm like, she is an amazing speaker. You know, that doesn't always apply to entrepreneurs. You know, in certain subjects, it did. When I had to go raise money or when we sold the company, I was very good at like.
What was that like?
I would say this. I think that I have mastered – I'm not an actress, but I have mastered being told information, processing it, and then delivering it. Because I didn't go to business school. I didn't do – and I'm not like, you know – down on myself. But like, there's a lot of things that like put you in a high pressure situation. Like we had to deal with like bankers and it was just very grown up things. And a big thing for me would be like, where are the grown ups in the room? And now I realized I'm the grown up, but I still look for the grown up, you know, and my CFO, who's like 4 years older than me, I like treated her like, I'm like, Mom, what do I say? She's like, you call them right back and you say cash only. I'm like, okay, okay. Like she would just like hype me and you can get into it and you get into the vibe of it. But it was really, I don't want to say it was intimidating. I felt like raising money, and you know this, if you raise money on something that already exists, it's very much a challenge. If you raise money on the vision of something, it's almost as if people would rather not see the tangible. I guess it's really reflective of where we are in culture. But like, I would be like, I have this many uniques a month and I have that. They'd be like, great. We heard about this other company that's thinking of. I'm like, thinking of? But thinking of doing something. Like, that just happened to me all the time. And I was like, I can't play in this world where like these ideas that don't exist are more important than what exists. Because it actually almost didn't matter our, you know, projections and stuff of it. It was like, what are you selling me? And so I, you know, I could do it. And I'm very lucky that we had the partners that we found. But it's just interesting for whatever I do next. I need something more tangible than selling, you know, a vision.
I get it. So one question that I ask everyone who comes on this show is, what advice would you give your younger self? Like, what would you say, hey, 19-year-old Sophia,
ooh,
this is what you need to know?
I would say you need to know that having outside interests will cultivate you to have a better career. Because I think that right now I get inspired by things outside of what my traditional space is. And I think before I thought I just had to like work and just keep really busy. And like, I don't think I necessarily like enjoyed other aspects. Like as simple as like, now I really enjoy working out. Like this isn't just a thing that I do for my body. Like I enjoy health and wellness and talking about it and like going to a Marianne Williamson like lecture or something. Like do those things that will apply. Whereas before it was either just like all work or a shutdown. So
balance is really important.
I think it's balanced, but I think educating myself in things. Like, I didn't go to college, and now all I can talk about is, like, do I want to take a class? I mean, I don't want to park at a class. I don't want to – and I don't want to do online either, but I want to – I think educating myself in something that doesn't apply to my day-to-day would be really exciting for me.
I also feel like, for me, it started when I was writing, and it came from this thing of, like, if I wasn't having life experiences outside what I was writing about, then I would have nothing to bring to the writing.
Yeah, but if you're a producer, you really have to just work with what's in front of you. So you don't really use outside sources and think – I am actually really grateful for social media because – I can catch a vibe of what is an interesting location or what's an interesting place or what people are feeling, and I can apply that to that. But it's not like I've experienced it. I'm just sort of telling you what's happening in the ecosystem. So I think that, you know, people who are taking a pottery class or are really like investing in a skill set that doesn't apply is just fun. It's very like Silicon Valley of me. But
so what are you going to do next?
Do you know? I don't fully know, but I know the direction. I'm obsessed with health and wellness. I love it so much. I love, I went to the Natural Food Expo, and it was like Disney, like my body actually exploded. We have to go next year. It's so exciting. Like you just, I mean, you're a foodie too. And I think the thing that she'll also remember is I would be like, oh my God, cauliflower crackers. And like run there and I'd be like, wait, but these actually don't taste good. But I was just like, it was like, I loved seeing food trends, you know? And I think that to me that is, trends move really quickly. And I understand that that's like a challenge in other areas. But for food, I'm like, this is only bettering, as long as we could figure out like the scalability of price, because that I think is a little excessive. But it was so cool. Like there was like, all these companies who are coming, like innovative things for like overnight oats or things that would be grab and go or using certain flours that would be better for you. I love that stuff. I love health and wellness so much. So I, whether it's a tangible product or not media, I'm a little over media. It's too much. I'm over content, but I understand how it does like produce consumer goods. But I want a location or a tangible good that I can say.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm happy for people in media. Like, I just don't connect. I feel bad about it because it was like what allows me to have the life that I have. But
that's okay. You can evolve.
Yeah.
Well, That's all the time.
Oh,
that we have.
Thank you so much.
That was producer and Hello Giggles co-founder Sophia Rossi. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Second Life. For more interviews with inspiring women like Sophia, head on over to mydomain.com where we have so many stories for you to peruse. As always, I'm interested in who you want to hear on this show, so send your requests to secondlife@mydomain.com or you can just DM me on Instagram @HillaryKerr. If you like today's show, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate us and review us. And also, if you want to screenshot us and share us and link to us and tell all of your friends, that would be lovely too. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life by MyDomain.com.